This podcast is brought to you by DIA, the trusted global neutral forum for healthcare product development professionals. DIA, driving insights to action.
2018 has been an eventful year for Dr. Joseph Sheeran. In January, he was appointed Senior Advisor R&D for Bayer, having previously served for 14 years as Head of Global Regulatory Affairs, Pharma and Consumer Care at Bayer. And on July 1st, he took the reins as Chair of the DIA Board of Directors. I am Alberto Grignolo, Editor of DIA Global Forum. Today, I am speaking with Joseph, an old but still young friend and colleague, to discuss his history with DIA and his vision for his future. Joseph, thank you for joining me today. Welcome.
Thank you, Alberto, for the invitation.
How did you first become aware of DIA, and what were your first interactions with DIA?
I became aware of DIA in the late 80s when I was still working for Servier and got an invitation to speak at the annual meeting, European annual meeting in Paris in the early 90s. Then I was already with Roussel Youclef working in Paris. And a couple of years later, I organized with the organizational committee the European meeting in Copenhagen, where I was made responsible for the organization of the scientific regulatory track. Moving a number of years forward, I then, of course, I came to the U.S., became involved also in U.S. meetings as a speaker, as a panelist, as a session chair, and also as a committee member for the regulatory affairs track in a number of years in the middle of 2005 to 2008, I believe. I don't fully exactly remember the years, but it was a couple of years where I did this particular activity. After that, I became then the chair of the regulatory affairs committee of the EMEA, the European Middle East and Africa Advisory Council. And the year thereafter, I then moved to the board of directors.
Great. It's been quite an interesting career over a number of years. You've become more and more embedded in DIA. So obviously, you've observed the association over time. So how have you seen DIA change over time during the period you've been associated with the organization?
Well, when I first became aware of the DIA, it was a relatively small organization. And it has grown over the years, so particularly if you look at the U.S. Annual meetings. What I remember is that in the beginning, there were probably around 4,000 to 5,000 participants. And at a certain point of time, I found myself in a meeting, I believe it was San Diego, where we had more than 8,000. Nowadays, we are back on a growing track again. And the last meeting which we had in Boston was a great success, and we were more than 7,000 participants there. The DIA change in generally has to deal with my career as well. And in terms of what I've described before, being part of the DIA activities in terms of speaker, being a panelist, being a session chair, being on in the organizing committees, permitted me to further evolve in some of my skill sets in terms of presentations, dealing with panel discussions, etc. What I also saw in the DIA evolution is particularly over the last number of years, I would say the last 5 to 6 years, since Barbara Lopez-Kunz has taken over as a CEO, the organization has become a much more modern organization and filling in the needs of the members, in my view, more than in the past.
You are now the chair of the board. What is your vision for DIA as board chair? What do you see in particular to be DIA's biggest opportunity to have an impact on the global healthcare community?
Well, we are living in a very dynamic time where the patients are becoming much more involved in their treatment and also within the development of new compounds and in healthcare in general. We also see that there are numerous developments going on from a treatment perspective, which are revolutionizing the healthcare. We're going from treatment to cure, and particularly the biologics which are coming and are around the corner, but already some of them are on the market, are really making a big difference. In this time of big change, it is great to be in part of an organization like the DIA, which wants to bring stakeholders together in order to discuss and foster the development of new products and new technologies. One of the major topics in this regard, which I forgot to mention, is developments in the IT environment with artificial intelligence, automation, machine learning, and deep learning. We as a DIA organization have a unique opportunity in order to bring these stakeholders together, but also to serve as a platform for information of our members and even beyond our members. Well, one of the developments which we are looking into in a moment is the DIA Now, which provides access to the information which is being discussed at the different meetings. And this will certainly enable the members to more rapidly get access to up-to-date information on particular topics.
Can you tell us more about DIA Now in practice? How does it work? How can people use it?
Well, if you have a request or a question related to a particular topic, you can, through keywords, search the database of the DIA and find all the relevant information which we have within the DIA database related to this particular topic. Access can be obtained through a subscription model, and this is being explored by many companies in the moment as we speak.
There are lots of organizations around the world that organize conferences, workshops, seminars, etc. What distinguishes DIA from other organizations? Is there something unique about DIA, and why should people consider DIA alongside or perhaps instead of other organizations?
Well, I think that DIA has one unique feature. It is that it's a neutral platform where it brings together all the different stakeholders which are involved in the development of new medical treatments. We have the regulators, we have the industry, we have the health technology associations, we have the patients all involved in the discussion on the different topics within the DIA. And I think that's a rather unique way of bringing people together. But in addition to that, we are also active from a global perspective. And so we're not only bringing the people together within a particular country, but we're bringing them together from a global perspective. And as we know, the development of new compounds is globalized. All the different topics which we're dealing with is in the majority globalized, although we have certain topics which are more local, like, for example, the opioid crisis, which we have in the U.S. is a more U.S.-related topic than a topic which is a topic for other countries.
So as you describe the DIA community as being global and very multidisciplinary, is that correct?
That is correct.
So do you have a particular message from you as chair of the board for this global multidisciplinary community at this time?
But what I wish for this multidisciplinary network and global network is that it will further grow. If you look at the membership of the DIA, where we have in the moment something like 14,000 members within the DIA community, if you look at the overall industry, the health authorities, the patients, and the health technology associations and other organizations which are involved indirectly or directly with the development of new products, we should be able to get a community which is a multiple of the 14,000 together. And that is one of my wishes moving forward, is that we are growing that community to a much larger community where these topics of interest are being discussed together in a very neutral platform way.
Joseph, I know you're very much a visionary. What does your crystal ball tell you about healthcare product development in 5 to 10 years from now, and what role DIA will play in that ecosystem 5 to 10 years from now?
Well, if you look at the clinical development, let me go first back to the development which we are seeing from a biologics perspective. I think we are entering a biologics era where cell therapy, CRISPR-Cas, gene therapy and other therapies are starting to become available in the next 5 to 10 years. Second, we have the developments within the digital world with the artificial intelligence, machine learning, deep learning, and automation going on. This will profoundly shift and shape the environment moving forward. How that will exactly look is difficult to predict, but some of the trends you can already see happening. The first thing is that we're going to smaller trials. When you go from a treatment to cure, the number of patients you need in order to show a cure is much smaller than the number of patients you would need in order to look for a treatment improvement of something like 2% in a larger population. Hence, the development from a clinical perspective is going more towards smaller trials. The second thing which I see is that the digital revolution, as we may say so, because some people even talk about a tsunami, is going to generate an explosion in real-world data because of everybody using these personal tools like smartwatches and things like that, and smart devices which are becoming available as well, which are going to monitor our day-to-day vital signs on an ongoing basis. If we can harvest these data and can use them in an optimal way, it will certainly enhance the interaction between the patient and the clinician. And by that token, also the disease treatment of the patient in question. DAA, as I indicated before, a very unique position in order to foster the dialogue between all these different stakeholders. And talking about it, we should try also to get the clinician on the table. Because mostly within the actual dialogue, what we see is that the clinician, the person, the physician who is treating the patient is very often not present at the table of these discussions.
So many changes coming in the coming years, and DIA can be a convener of important conversations.
Yes, plus a provider of information. I think that the discussions which we have at the annual meetings in the US, in Europe, in Japan, in China, are unique, putting us in a unique position in order to be able to provide our members access to up-to-date discussions which are ongoing in these different regions, and by that token, permit them to update their strategies moving forward.
Joseph, the healthcare community knows you for your long career as a champion of global regulatory affairs. How do you think regulatory affairs will change in the next decade?
When I look back to the first years in regulatory affairs, because most people may not know that, but once I started in the industry, my first job was in regulatory affairs. Servier had a unique system in order to bring people from the university into the pharmaceutical industry by giving them the opportunity to learn more about the industry in different departments. And the first department where I was allocated to was a regulatory affairs department. Then I went to a pharmacology research department and then to marketing in order to come back afterwards to the regulatory affairs department. At that time, everything was paper-based and a lot of time was spent on looking and correcting after paper-based documents. And sometimes you even had to do some detective work in order to find some of the documentation you wanted to have and which were in the archives of the company, which then had to be explored in order to get to the adequate documentation you wanted to have. In those days, the submission files were maybe 100 binders in Europe. In the US, it must have been more because of the fact that the US, also the individual data were submitted to the authorities. Nevertheless, it was a overseeable amount of paperwork. That changed over the years, and it became almost a truckload of documentation which had to be submitted in the early 90s. And then in the early 90s, you saw a development coming up, which was electronic submissions. Looking back at the electronic submissions of those days and comparing them to the electronic submissions of nowadays, there are huge differences. As you can imagine, at that time, the systems were certainly not optimized in order to be able to submit the documentation in electronic format to the authorities. And everybody was a little bit exploring and piloting these kind of activities. So there was in the earlier days a larger focus on some of the operational aspects which go within the regulatory affairs work. That operational work is going to be automated. And from my perspective, that operational work will be very limited in the coming years. I think that in 5 to 10 years from now, the operational aspect of the regulatory affairs department will probably be much less than what it is in the moment. In addition to that, we have two major activities. One is the support of the development of regulatory strategies, support of development and the development of regulatory strategies. The approval processes are, from my perspective, included in that particular activity. And then, of course, you have the main, what we call the regulatory compliance activities after the approval, in order to keep the approvals up to date with the regulations. When you look at the work after approval, this has been a large chunk of the regulatory affairs work. Estimates which I have seen, and also within our organization which I have seen, are going from something like 60 to 70% of the total workload which we have within regulatory. Also, those processes I see being more automated. I think the pharmacovigilance activities, which are related to the updates of prescriber information and the patient information, is going to be optimized and can be, in my view, also much more standardized than it is in the moment. I don't see the reason why we couldn't use similar language for particular interactions or involvements of enzyme systems, which could influence the availability of a particular drug. The regulatory strategy, of course, is an area which is difficult, or in my view, very challenging to automate. But what we can do there is that the regulatory intelligence, which goes into the regulatory strategy function, can be optimized further by the use of artificial intelligence. And very often people have talked about the use of an Alexa-like server or a Siri-like server, which can answer any particular question related to a regulatory or to development in this case, and could help the project teams and the regulatory affairs specialists responsible for the development of a particular product in defining the best strategy forward.
Finally, Joseph, please tell us something that we don't already know about you. For example, how do you relax? How do you unwind when you stop working, assuming you do stop working from time to time?
I have a little bit more time even nowadays than I had last year, as you can imagine, as a senior advisor, compared to managing a larger team as I did over the last 14 years within pharma and consumer health. The things which I do in order to unwind is I like to read, and I read quite a few books, and I'm still reading a lot in the moment. In addition to that, I like to listen to music, in particular jazz music. In addition to that, I try to play some golf, although the last couple of years have been a little bit more of a challenge in order to play that game.
Well, those are interesting activities. And as you chase that white ball around the greens around the world, I want to thank you very much for your time today and wish you best of luck in your year as DIA board chair.
Thank you very much, Alberto, and I thank you very much for this interview. Thank you.
For DIA Global Forum, I am Alberto Grignolo.
To learn more about this topic, visit us online at diaglobal.org.